That's our brand.
I'm digging that. I just you have to understand, Ben, like my image of Kyle in all the times that we've hung out together is, you know, we're standing instead of what's he holding a baseball there. See, that would have been a vodka soda. And we're up at PHG at 2 a.m. like sitting against the bar like this, creeping the freaking scene, man.
Gentlemen, welcome back to WSD Podcast. K-Win, Big Ben, we got a very special guest, Eric Burns. You know him. 10-year Major League Baseball career, MLB network analyst, created Let Them Play Foundation, the Daily Hustle Podcast, Ultra Marathon, Team Go Hard. Did I miss anything else in that intro?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing you missed, as a matter of fact, and I don't know how much of the beginning part of this you guys are going to play, but I guess you could say No Filter Network co-founder. I told you two dudes, you are auditioning for it over the next half hour. We're doing this pod right now because we're looking for content creators, and we'll see how the West Coast podcast actually does, Big Ben.
I love it.
All right, so I'm doing the play-by-play today since I know you, and Ben's my color guy. So we got some questions for you. We're going to travel the world of fitness. We're going to get into baseball, and then we're going to go to the West Coast swing. Off the cuff, there's no wrong answers, rapid-fire questions. Are you ready?
Yeah, dude, let's go.
All right.
First of all, what's the little emoji in there, upper right-hand corner?
That's the Big Ben and K-Win. That's us.
That's our caricature. Doesn't look like us? Do we need a new thing?
That's our brand.
I'm digging that. I just you have to understand, Ben, like my image of Kyle in all the times that we've hung out together is, you know, we're standing instead of what's he holding a baseball there. See, that would have been a vodka soda. And we're up at PHG at 2 a.m. like sitting against the bar like this, creeping the freaking scene, man.
No, we went to the county fair, Eric, and got that done. Sat there where some guy sketched us. He said, "What are you into, Kyle?" Kyle said, "Baseball and basketball." I said, "Football." And there you go. We got the logo.
That's so good.
Upgrade a little bit.
So I want to take you back to 2013. It's how we met. It was Super Bowl 47 in New Orleans. We're on Bourbon Street. I had a cocktail in my hand, Niners versus Ravens. And this is the one story that I tell about you, and you're a legend for all my friends that don't even know you. So we're at the bar, and me and my buddy are bragging about our tickets. We're like, it's behind the end zone, face value. We're like 30 rows up. And you look at me and look at my buddy, and you're just like, it's 30 minutes before the game. I don't have my tickets yet. And I guarantee I'll end up with better tickets than both of you two clowns. We looked at each other. We're like, well, he's probably right.
And did you?
Where did you end up?
No. I did. That's the most hilarious part of all this. I was convinced I beat the system. I beat it. You know how many? Like, I've probably been to 6 or 7 Super Bowls. And I'm not saying this to be like, oh, hey, like, look, like, I mean, it was a thing. There was a time in my life where it was like every year, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl. And Peter Princey, one of my dearest best friends, basically diehard Patriots fan. And so the Patriots, when they were going, when they go to 9 Super Bowls, it seemed like every year we were doing this. And ironically, like in the midst of this run was the Niners in New Orleans. And, you know, we go out there and Princey and I just, we had the utmost confidence that, you know, essentially up until about an hour before the game when they could shut off online sales, like you just wait and you manipulate it. And you know, we had pockets of cash at the same time. We're ready to go on with credit card if we had to. And the one time this thing has ever backfired was that Super Bowl in New Orleans. But I will say this. So that's the blackout Super Bowl, right? When the whole thing went dark.
Yeah.
We found it was like $100, and we found the nearest bar to the Superdome. And what happened was we went in there and had a raging, raging, unbelievable time to the point where it was like, in between the breaks and everything, and this the most incredible Super Bowl I've been to, and I didn't actually get.
Wow, I can't believe that's the first time I've heard that story.
Yeah, so we, dude, the worst part about it, and there's that, you know, I just told you the great part about it. The worst part about it was, like, I went to the Super Bowl in 1989 or 1990 maybe with my dad. And at the time I was 12, 13 years old. And it was like this really just awesome experience. Right. And it was just the two of us. It was Bourbon Street. I had my first sip of a Hurricane. I remember I had rollerblades. And so I'm not joking. Like, rollerblades first came out. So, like, I just get my rollerblades and I'm going over the bricks and doing jumps and stuff. And just, fish out of water, obviously, in New Orleans, but amazing experience. We sat at the 50-yard line, dude. We were up, but literally like 50-yard line. And so my dad passed away in 2011. And so I told my sister, Shay, and I'm like, Shay, you know what? Like, we need to go. We need to be there. Like, this is just super cool. And dad would love it. And, you know, I show up in New Orleans. I got the tickets. Don't worry about it. Just get your ass to New Orleans. We got a place to stay. Everything's taken care of. Just get yourself there. And so my sister's like looking at me with like 30 minutes to go when we knew like this wasn't happening. There's not a dollar amount that I could have spent to get a ticket. No tickets. And she's like, so I bet your dad's pretty. And so I was thinking of like halftime when it's again like the confetti dropping, and then the lights had gone out in the stadium. I said, "Dad's plenty fucking happy, Shay. Don't worry about it." So it was obviously an incredible experience. The flashback back to when I was a kid and everything else. But no, every now and again, there's a phrase that, you know, we all need to be reminded of. It's called stay humble or be humble. And that I was humble. There's also another phrase that I like to go by, and it's this 2,000-year-old Stoic philosophy term. It's called amor fati. That means love your fate, no matter what it is. And it's not what happens to us, but it's how we react that defines our life. And that was a typical example where I could have been like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I blew it. And da, 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 da. And I said, nah, I said, we're making the most of this situation. And it ended up being, really, of all the Super Bowls I've ever been to, probably, you know, I might even put it at number one. We had that good of a time. Although the Niners did lose on the last play of the game, basically. But yeah, that's funny, man. I was such an arrogant asshole to go ahead and tell you that I'm going to get better tickets than you. And I'd eat my words.
I love it. You think if you had your rollerblades that time around, you might have got some tickets?
Dude, I had the sharper
grown man in rollerblades,
bro. Oh,
were you wearing spandex too? A spandex onesie.
This is before rollerblades, like the rollerblade explosion, where it became not cool anymore. This was Sharper Image was like the first ones to come out with rollerblades. That was it. And so all I got like brand new, but even back then there were a couple $100. It was my big Christmas present. And I'm just, dude, I went down Old La Honda Road where I lived and on these things. And it's just like thing, like crazy steep grade turns, everything. And ended up eating shit, you know, three quarters of the way down, and I took my skin down to the bone.
Wow.
Yeah, it was gnarly, dude. But yeah, that was the before they became not cool. And then, I don't know, maybe they're making a comeback now.
Well, you know what is cool is ultra marathons and all the fitness and all the stuff you're doing. So do you still own the record, world record, for the most holes of golf played in 24 hours?
Yeah, as far as I know. Yeah, that was a feat that I kind of tripped into. And I just say that in the sense that, like, literally I got invited because I was an ultra marathoner. And I played a little golf, and that this guy reached out to me. And he's like, yo, he's like, would you be interested in, participating in this 12-hour, golf event? And you go out there and basically play as many holes as possible, at this course. And this was in Napa. So this was April of 2018. And so I'm like, cool. And so I started training for it. And I knew, I mean, 12 hours of running, I was prepared to do, but there's still obviously, that's a lot of running. And then the element of playing golf. And so while training for it, what happened was I duffed a shot. I was practicing on a Monday at Sharon Heights when the course is closed, because you can't practice on a normal day because you're running through everybody. And so I hit shot at number 10, and then I hit another shot. And I duffed it. And I was like on my fourth or fifth round of the day, and I was pissed. And so I got up and I ran up to the ball, and I just went like this, whack. And I hit it one-handed, and I stuck it right by the pin from like 100 yards up. And I'm like, wait, hold on a second. What if I don't have to stop to hit the ball? Because your score doesn't matter. Yes. At that point, my fastest round was like, let's call it like 47, 48 minutes. And then that last round, I played a whole nother round because I'm like, I want to see if I play a whole round like this, how much I would improve my time. And I ended up playing that round, the last round, with this new technique in 42 minutes.
All right, Eric, I'm a golfer. I have so many questions about this.
Yeah.
So many questions. Did you putt everything out? One.
Yeah, you have to putt everything out.
Just putt everything out.
Yeah, you have to play by the. It's very strict. You have to play exactly by, the
USGA rules or whatever.
USGA rules. You know what? It was a real help. Actually, was that the leaving the flag in. And the new rules that came into effect, and then the new lost ball rule, where you don't have to go back to hit where you were before, you can drop and take a 2-stroke penalty. That was huge as well.
All right, I got a question. This is foreshadowing a later segment of this podcast.
Yeah.
Who holds the record for the fastest round ever on the PGA? It's called the Sprint Cup. It was completed in 2016 at East Lake in Atlanta.
No idea, but I would take them on, whoever.
He walks his putts in.
He walks his putts in.
Two-letter last name.
Two-letter last name.
His sponsorship is by like some – he's got like a what is that called? A cannonball. Kevin Na.
Yeah.
Under two hours.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool, but he's still like over an hour off of one of my. Yeah.
Kevin Na, you're officially garbage.
I got a lot of respect for those guys. Obviously they're unbelievable golfers, but after going out there, so that was a 12-hour one. This is what happened. So then I go to the 12-hour thing, and the guy asked me before, and this guy's a professional speed golfer. Like, it's actually a real thing. They do this thing in Bandon Dunes and whatever else. And so I knew I was going up against some heavyweights. And then the other thing the guy told me, there was an ultra runner, Carl Meltzer is his name, the speed goat. And I can't run with Meltzer. I know I can't. I mean, he's just – he's at a different level. But I'm like, maybe with this new style, I can be more efficient. Now, he held the 12-hour world record that was 235 holes. And then there was a guy that beat him in New Zealand that played like 237. And there's specific qualifications, being it's like it's got to be 6,000 yards. And again, you're supposed to, obviously all adhere to all the golf rules and everything else. And so then I went out there that day in Napa, and I he asked me how many holes. And I was almost embarrassed to tell him that I'm doing math on this. I'm like, geez, man, like, I think I could get this record. But I told him, I said, yeah, I said at least 200. I said, maybe more. And he's like, all right. He's like, well, you can go first. I'm like, okay. And so I went. And it's funny because I teed off, and I'm like, here I go with my new style, right? Teed off, hit a nice two-hand tee shot, which I hit most of my tee shots two hands. And I go up to the first the ball, the first one, right, to hit in the middle of the fairway. Whiffed it. And everyone's got to be like, oh, my goodness, what is this jackass doing? And so then I went back. I'm like, okay. And then I hit it again, then hit it again, hit it again. And then I was off the race, and I ended up playing 245 holes. And then that was the so that stands as the unofficial 12-hour world record. But then we looked at it, and we're like, you know what? Because we'd done this triathlon across America the summer of 2018, actually after that. But we were looking for our next event for the Let Them Play Foundation to raise money for kids and youth activity and all the local sports around here in Half Moon Bay. We're like, why don't we just put together this 24-hour golf challenge? And figured out that the world record was 402. And it was held by a guy by the name of Ian Colston. He's an Australian. He was an Olympic marathon caliber runner. And, you know, he set this record. It was like 47 years ago. And it was like, okay, now this is something to shoot for, right? Because that 12-hour one had been broken a bunch. But the other thing is, I there's no way I was going to get Guinness out to the 12-hour one, because that'd be, in my mind, that's false bravado, right? Like, I didn't think I was actually going to get it, but obviously I did. And so for this one now, we're like, you know what? Let's bill it. Screw it. Like, I think I can get this. And again, just doing the math on it and stuff. And so we made a huge event out of it, raised a boatload of money. I mean, I want to say almost $100,000 in one day of the golf event. And we bring out the different, like, you know, local soccer club, the Half Moon Bay Pirates baseball team, the Pescadero softball team came out, the Half Moon Bay football team came out, the cheerleading squad came out, and they all ran around with me, which is about 4.5-5 miles. Per round. And after the round, we handed out checks, $1,000 here, $1,000 here, $2,500 here, you know, whatever it was. And it was just an awesome, awesome day, awesome experience. There's no way I could have done it without, you know, the support squad that I had that made it easy. You know, and that was, the guy from Guinness came out to, you know, authenticate it, which was, They're tough, man. They're a little bit of a pain in the ass. You know, get them out there. It's expensive to get them out, to come out. And then it's just like, dude, he was with me for the last 8 hours watching everything. And then the other thing is, we had to keep a score. And so you had to have a different person keeping score. And I had to have a PGA professional with me, a certified professional at all times. So we had to have, but they couldn't work twice. So we had to have 6 certified PGA professionals working only in 4-hour increments because they didn't want them getting tired.
So you're saying the coordination was pretty easy to pull that off?
It made you know what was cool though is that a couple of things. Number one, the coordination was so difficult, you know, but it obviously inspired me to be able to go out there and train hard enough to make sure that, you know, I was. At least going to get close to it or give myself a good chance of getting it. And then, you know, in handing the checks out too, like that made it all worth it. You know, when you let people know like why you're doing it and it's not just some crazy, it's a goofy look at me thing. I get it. But at the same time, when you have a cause bigger than you, then, you know, and you keep that at the forefront, then, you know, that serves as your motivation to continue to keep going when you're, let's say 18 hours into this thing, 19 hours into this thing, and just like, dude, you hear the mountain lion screeching and just, you know, completely shredded my forearm in the process of all this. Obviously, you know, you think about the running, like I end up running 106 miles, but it was the shots. I think I took like 3,000 and something shots, and like that you can't prepare for. You can prepare to run 106 miles. You can't, it's, you know, taking 3,000 shots in a day. Like I went to the driving range and hit 500 balls a couple of times and that was enough. I was like, dude, I'm done.
All right. I have to ask for all the golfers that I know that I am, what was your low round during that marathon?
I'd have to go back and look at it. I think in the 110s probably. But you have to understand, like, I was, so I was, after I teed off, I was just hitting. So there were a couple rounds where I had 20, I played 23 and a half rounds. I parred 24 holes. And so I averaged a par around, and then I want to say two birdies at least. One of them was on a par five. I used one club the entire time. It was a woman's 8-iron. And I chose that because the graphite is super light.
So are you running with like a driver and the women's 8-iron?
No, one club, bro. Woman,
I picture you just doing something like it's like a polo match, damn near. Like you are just sprinting, yeah, and just hitting it, and then you're tapping it in.
Yeah, that was it. It
rip the ball, no tee up, drop it, boom, no, go.
No tee up, obviously, it's too much time. But so if I'm running up to the tee box, I would toss the ball, run up to the tee box, and then hit. And then after that, then I would run up and then do the polo, 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 polo until I got near the green. And then I would get into a putting stance and just use the blade to putt it in. Yeah, I'll send you guys a video, man. There's some really cool footage that we captured through this whole process. This guy, Eric Cochran, who did the Let Them Play Triathlon Across America documentary, that's now out on all platforms for you guys to go ahead and consume. But we're planning on eventually making this one into a documentary too. It's just, here's the thing. If there's a cool story to be told, like, let's tell the story. And I just think it's a cool story for a couple different reasons. Number one, the record stood for 47 years. And then the other thing is that, you know, when we're able to rethink how we do everything in life, and there's so often in life that like we're told that you're going to have to hit a baseball a certain way, and you're going to hit a golf ball a certain way, and you're going to run a business a certain way, and it's like when we're able to think outside of the box, you never know what's possible. So there's this really kind of cool underlying message through the wackiness of all of it, because I'm still convinced that like you give me an ultra runner. And anybody with any sort of hand-eye coordination, that I think 500 holes is possible.
It's unbelievable. I was telling Ben, like, we were going to go into this podcast. We had like all these baseball questions, and then we did a little research. We're like, no, we want to talk about some of the other stuff, some of your world records, and Let Them Play Foundation, you know, running across America, doing all this fundraising, a man of many talents.
I don't know. I did master of none.
except Aziz has already done that.
24-hour speed golf.
Speed golf.